we're having a focus on the heart. So the format of this session is I'm going to give a talk, then we're going to have a lying down body scan, not as long as last time. And we're going to have a silent, mindful tea break. And then we'll have a sitting meditation and end with the Amitabha mantra. So that's the plan for this session. Admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye? That is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other eye in this world is dying to hear. So that's a poem by Hafiz. I felt very drawn to Hafiz today. So I had another one this morning in the meditation. And I think it's just sort of like an instinctive feeling that some of his poem just goes straight to the heart and helps my heart to open. And I just felt drawn to Hafiz. And particularly those lines, still though, think about this great pull in us to connect. And I think for me, the heart is very much about connection and interconnection. I'm still reflecting on Paramananda's three sentences that describe the theme of the retreat. So I'm just going to remind us of those. Through dwelling in our own heart, we are connected to the anima mundi, or the soul of the world. Symbolically, we can understand the heart as containing both what is most intimate and most universal within us. We'll be exploring how a body-based poetic approach to meditation can help us to feel more comfortable in our own skins and more at home in the world. So with certain phrases in that particularly that resonate with me, like the dwelling in our own heart, understanding the heart as containing what's most intimate and most universal within us. And then intrigued by exploring how a body-based poetic approach to meditation can help us feel more comfortable in our skins and at home in the world. I mean, I was reflecting, what does it mean, a poetic approach to meditation? And how can a poetic approach be body-based? But a lot of what I've been doing is it's just like the phrases or the words, again, they're reverberating in my psyche, in my heart, in my body. And I think it's because they all have like symbolic meaning, metaphorical meaning, poetic meaning. And I suppose that's the thing about a poetic approach is you don't have one literal meaning. There's loads and loads and loads of possible meanings, and we all bring our own associations, our own meanings to any given word or phrase that has that kind of symbolic quality to it. And certainly just the word heart, for me, I feel it in my body. I feel something opening around my heart area. And I just, lots of things that I can't quite put into words. It's sort of just there, heart, in my mind. It's quite interesting because actually if I put the in front of it, it has a very different feel to me. So if I talk about the heart, then I start getting a lot more literal about it. Much more thinking about the heart as an organ and mechanical organ pumping the blood around our body. It was interesting yesterday when Paramananda was talking about the heart. and the different chambers of the heart. And I had a whole big flashback to my biology lessons at school, where we had to draw all these pictures and diagrams of the heart and all the explanations about how it works and how it pumps the air in the blood through the arteries, and then the carbon dioxide comes back through the veins. So there's a sort of very practical aspect to the heart, biological aspect, but then also it has all these metaphorical, poetic associations. And it was, yes, I love that image of the heart with the wings, and that connection Paramahansa made about how the lungs are actually laying on the heart and those are the wings of the heart. But there was also, you know, that whole image of the heart's release, the heart's freedom, and wings for me, like, very much evoke that sense of freedom. I was also quite interested, at some point yesterday, Paramahansa was talking about the heart being the organ which perceives electrical fields, which I'd never really thought about. But it is something about how the heart does perceive a lot of things. So this is going to be a little bit of a me going from one thought to another. But yes, I suppose, and it's all this kind of poetic approach. You have an association, and I'm just kind of going to go with them and then see where it leads me, really. Because there's something very mysterious about the heart. But also, it's not separate from the body, it's not separate from the mind. Obviously, the heart is an organ, part of our body. And, you know, we perceive, we feel, certainly from Buddhist terms, you know, we use the word citta that could refer to both the heart and the mind. And I think that's particularly helpful in trying to avoid getting into the sort of split between our rational mind, I think, therefore I am, and then our emotional feeling experience, because of course they're all totally interlinked. And I think, yes, I'm interested in looking at the heart both in a sort of literal and poetic way. As well as, you know, as well as the sort of it being part of the body. And I suppose you could, you know, even though there's that very a very practical thing that the heart is doing to keep us alive, you know, pumping the blood through our bodies, you can also look at that whole function in a more poetic way, you know, about the keeping the lifeblood flowing. And it's sort of like it filters out the poisons, doesn't it? It helps get rid of the waste that would otherwise poison us if it wasn't removed. And that link between the heart and the lungs, you know, and the breath, you know, it's the heart that through the blood sends the oxygen through our bodies. It comes in through the breath. So, yeah, what does it mean, a poetic approach to meditation? Yeah, I've been reflecting quite a lot because I think my practice resonates so much with all the things that Paramahansa has been saying about just being receptive and not trying to make anything happen or do anything, just sort of way like being there in the body, in the posture with awareness, and allowing things to unfold or be there. This is my interpretation. It may not be exactly what he meant. And that there's certain kind of awareness and insights that happen when we can just let go that cognitive awareness, that thinking. We had a bit of a little discussion in one of the question and answers, where I was getting a little bit frustrated around it's like just like how many people struggle with the mindfulness of breathing and the counting, and just say, well, you don't have to count in the mindfulness of breathing, you know, just take ownership of your practice, and if you can be there with the body and the breath, don't bother with it, you know, and lots of other ways of practicing the mindfulness of breathing, even though I know that that four-stage structure can be very helpful, and I do sometimes go back to it myself, because I, you know, I do think we can get in that habit of we've been taught it a certain way and then we just try and do it, whether or not it's helpful. So yeah, in that discussion, then Paramahandana was saying, well, actually, for some people, he thought it was really helpful to have the counting. You know, he said, if you can count to 10, you probably don't need to, but maybe some people can't, and therefore, actually, having that discipline of using the counting as a way of becoming more present and getting your mind a bit more aware could be really useful. And then we got into this whole discussion about form and structure in meditation, which I think is, for me, always an ongoing exploration. I think at the moment I'm doing much more formless practice, but I do sometimes go back to the structures, particularly if I'm teaching them. But I do know that in the past and at certain times, I find it really, really helpful to have more structure. And that if I'd started off and someone had just said, just sit, don't try, don't make any effort, don't use your mind, don't think, I wouldn't have known what I was doing, and I'd have just been sort of sitting, drifting in some kind of, I remember Vasantra once talking about sort of my mental soup that we can get into in our meditation, which very much, I think captures sometimes some of the things that I've done in meditations in the past. So I think there's something about, at a certain level, we do need to let go of our cognitive thinking because it keeps us in a certain state of mind. But also there's times when it's really helpful to have some cognitive thinking, and that, you know, and some practice where we're engaging our thinking minds alongside our imaginations. Well, I suppose anyone that's got a formal structure like the Metta Bhavana and the other Brahma Viharas, six element practice, if we're choosing to use the Anapanasati, or if you're doing a sadhana visualization practice, you know, which often, as well as having images, may include verses or phrases. And when we're doing insight practices, we may actually try and reflect on things like dukkha and the other three lakshanas, you know, impermanence and substantiality. And there's a part where you may use a bit of the thinking and then need to sort of let go and let it happen with the other parts of your mind, I suppose. For me, that's been my experience, that the mind is so much more than our thinking mind. And I think, well, I was certainly somebody who was very identified with my thinking mind, you know, above all the other aspects of me, whether it was my body or my feelings. And it's been very healing and integrating to get more balance, and also to realize again that there's a whole level of awareness in the mind that's not about thinking, which I knew anyway, actually. We all know that. And also that there isn't that kind of split between the heart and the mind. But I think what is really, why one of the reasons I like the word heart is because it does get me out of that more heady space, that more cognitive space, that more rational understanding of the mind and thinking. And something about a letting go into sort of more mysterious sort of space. So much of what happens in meditation is beyond concepts, beyond words. And I like that about it, and I don't really want to try and put it into words, concepts, even though we might use images, we might use words to try and, you know, talk about it with other people. I think there's something quite precious about not doing that, actually. So, yeah, with the more poetic thing, one of the things that I noticed was as we moved into the heart days, I was just sort of finding all these words and associations popping up from time to time, or phrases around the heart. Title of that book by Sharon Salzberg, Heart as Wide as the World. Remembering, and I'm not sure what fairy tale it is, where those other villain has protected themselves by actually hiding their heart away in a metal box somewhere, so nobody can kill them because their heart is protected somewhere else. Christina Rossetti poem, My Heart is Like a Singing Bird. And then just lots of words that are either linked with heart or used to describe heart, like tender-hearted, kind-hearted, open-hearted, broken-hearted, heavy-hearted, light-hearted, soft-hearted, hard-hearted, heart-sore. And then true, we talk about people having a true heart or have a false heart, you know. And our heart really feels betrayal, doesn't it? We talk about the heart's betrayal, and the heartache, feeling heart sore, something heartfelt. So there's very much a sense of the heart being associated with feeling and emotion. And I also think it's quite interesting that with some of those phrases, it's like we describe other people in terms of how we perceive their heart, you know, that this is someone who's hard-hearted or soft-hearted or some, yeah, kind-hearted or cold-hearted, yeah, closed, yeah, or someone open, tender and caring. They're all, for me, associated with a certain quality in the heart. And we can feel quite restricted in our heart, can't we? There can be tense tightness. We can feel quite protective of our heart because, in a way, that's the part where we connect with others in the world. And if we are very open and receptive, then we risk being hurt. And probably we all have been hurt at some point in our lives around our hearts. And we all probably have found ways of protecting it, some of which may not be helpful now. And I'm not saying that we don't need to do that, because I think we do, actually. But if we're aware of it, then maybe we can sort of bring more awareness about when and how we can soften around the heart, when we can be more receptive, more open. There's very much that sense of the heart, as I said, being a way that we connect with others and we experience connectedness, interconnectedness. You know, we talk about the heart going out, don't we? Heart going out to meet someone, heart going out to the world. So intuitively, we do have that sense of how the heart is a way that we connect. And that sense of the heart can be so expansive. You can be big-hearted, warm-hearted. And often when we talk about healing, yes, we're healing our whole self, but we often talk about healing our hearts, isn't it? Because that's where we experience the pain, the woundedness. Yeah. Just trying to think of that phrase about Pramanda was saying that we need to love ourselves, not because we're perfect, but because we're imperfect, and something about because we're wounded and imperfect. And I think we are all wounded, and part of our practice, part of our path is around sort of trying to heal the wound, or at least trying to mitigate the wound. I was very interested in that poem yesterday. I loved that poem yesterday, actually, and there was that whole thing about how there's part portions of the heart that are dead, and they're dead, and not trying to bring them back. You know, just stuff. Okay, so boom, boom, boom. Yeah, so I think for me, there's something about recognizing the heart's wisdom. And again, I think insight, it's very easy to associate insight very much as something that we do with our thinking, rational mind, seeing through, having more clarity, aligning ourselves with reality, seeing things as they really are. And I think for me, one of my learning journeys has been about actually understanding that it's not necessarily something that the rational mind does. I think the rational mind can help get to the places to give us a framework. Certainly really helps for me having a Dharmic framework, having certain ways of looking at things, you know, which include conditioning and co-production, which includes the lakshanas and the vimokshas, that includes just understanding of, you know, suffering and dukkha and craving and all the things that I'm working with, you know, trying to transform, and yet that paradox of, you know, trying not to transform them, just trying to allow them to be there, trying to own them, trying to love them, and then that in itself can create the transformation rather than trying to actively try to change or force something to be different. And not approaching meditation and life and practice always with that kind of doing mode, wanting to do something, but also being much more receptive. But the deeper changes for me have always happened when I do relax that trying to make something happen. I remember going on, I think it was my first like 2 week solitary retreat, and I got all these plans of what I was going to be doing and books to read, meditations to do. And in the very first day, the first book I got was a Pema Chodron book, and I think one of the first lines in it was something about fundamentally, you know, if we're trying to transform ourselves, it's an act of aggression against the self, which had quite a strong effect on me. And I did reflect a lot on it, and I did end up just letting go of everything. And I probably had the deepest experience I had at that point on a solitary, and probably one of the deepest experiences I'd had on a retreat at all. And there was something about that, just letting go and just connecting with nature. I did loads and loads of meditating outside, you know, being in my sense experience, the sun on my skin, the wind, hearing all the sounds, noticing all the flowers and the trees, all the little creatures, the bees, the flies, the spiders. It was quite interesting, that sort of connection with nature. And I had all these really lovely encounters, like a couple of deer coming really close, you know, just like a few feet away, just a few feet away from a hare, a frog, or probably it was a toad, I guess, coming almost up to my feet. And I think some of that was me just being still, but I think some of it was me just having opened in a way to that connection, the heart of the world, the soul of the world, maybe that's evoked for me in that anima mundi, sort of feeling the interconnectedness with all the trees, with nature, and with all the wildlife around me. Almost like they could sense that in me, and therefore I became part of the world, part of their world as well. But I did love that phrase. And again, I can't remember exactly that Paramananda said about the earth loving us as part of itself. you know, if I think of it with a rational mind, doesn't do much for me. But just if I just say the phrase, feel the phrase in my body, in my heart, it just has such a strong, again, I can't even put it into words really. And I think sometimes it's interesting how a word or phrase can have that kind of symbolic meaning, and we don't have to necessarily understand what it means or analyze it, but just allowing it to enter into our psyches, entering into our hearts and our bodies, will have an effect. And I think that's something for me about the heart perceiving things, not just electrical fields. I think it perceives deep, profound truths about reality, about the world, about ourselves. So for me, seeing things as they really are is maybe more coming from the heart than my mind. But again, in Buddhism, we don't have that split. So it is the heart's mind that sees things as they really are. And also, I don't think it's a distinction from the body, because I think the body is always aware. The body's picking up things, truths, things that we know beforehand. Yeah. And in fact, the heart is part of the body doing all that perceiving. So all those dichotomies, all those separations that we find helpful sometimes in understanding things, there's another place when, of course, they're all insubstantial and none of them are real. And maybe aligning ourselves with reality is as much about letting go of that as anything else. So I just just like to encourage you to listen to your heart, to trust your heart. We've been talking about trusting the breath and trusting the body. I say above all, trust your heart. And I'll just end with the Hafiz poem again. Admit something. Everyone you say to them, love me. Of course, you do not do this out loud. Otherwise, someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye, that is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other eye in this world is dying to hear? Okay, so that's the end of my talk. And we're going to be moving into a lying down body scan for those people who are comfortable and would like to lie down. So you can remain sitting on cushions and chairs if you prefer, or any other position that works for you. And if you need to just have a quick break, do that. So for me, heart is very much associated with love and kindness and compassion, gladness and joy, all of the Brahma Viharas, yeah. And I think we really do need to be kind to our bodies. So one way we can be kind to our bodies is in finding the posture that works for us. So we've been talking quite a lot about posture. You know, Paramahansa has been talking a lot about posture and alignment. And not in a way about rigidness, yeah? You know, in a way, I think as he was pointing out, if your body is aligned, then it requires the least effort to remain in position to remain upright or whatever else it is if you are sitting. But the body, you know, posture is always a work in progress. You know, there's always lots of little micro adjustments, things that are happening in our bodies. At least there are in mine. I don't know about yours, but I'm not always just sitting absolutely still for the whole sit. But it took me a while to give myself permission for that. And it also took me a while to give myself permission, you know, at different times to adopt different postures. Yeah. And I think one thing that freed me from that was having a knee injury and therefore not being able to sit on cushions in the posture that I had been before. For a while, I had to sit on a chair. That was interesting because the whole my whole ego felt that that wasn't proper way of sitting and that real meditators sit, you know, cross-legged on the floor. But I found that I could meditate very effectively, if not more effectively, on a chair because I wasn't struggling with physical discomfort a lot of the time. Not that I think there's anything wrong with having a bit of discomfort when you're sitting. Sometimes that can help us to be present and aware and can be a bit of a gateway. But I don't think it's like that's what you should do. There's something about actually being kind to your body, being comfortable. I mean, often we do have discomfort and pain, and you know, some of us are coming with chronic pain, illness, that means that we're always in some pain. So I think it is very important to do what we can to care for our bodies. Yeah. And sometimes if we force ourselves to sit in the wrong way, we can actually do damage to our body. So listening to our body on a physical level, I think, is really helpful too. Anyway, that was just me sharing some thoughts. And I'm just going to encourage everybody over the next 2 or 3 minutes to either find a nice, comfortable lying down position or a comfortable sitting position. And actually, I'm going to be kind to myself and I'm just going to pop to the loo. Okay, so we'll start in just 1 minute. And we're going to about half an hour on the body scan. Then we're going to have maybe 15 minutes silent tea break. And I'd encourage you to come back and we can do it communally, have that sense of connection even while we're having our tea. And then we'll have another sit and end with a mantra. So just bringing awareness to your posture, whether you're lying or sitting, just really getting a sense of the actual shape of your body right now. You're lying down, you're lying on your side, or you're lying on your back. You're in semi-supine, with your knees up, feet on the floor, or your legs extended out. And if you're lying on your back, hopefully your head is supported. So feeling that connection with the ground. Allowing your body to be part of the earth. Supported by the earth. Trusting the earth, so surrendering your weight, allowing it to flow down, trusting gravity to hold you in place and the earth to support weight. Allowing your head to be supported if you're lying down on your back. The head's very heavy, so just allowing the weight of the head to sink into the cushion, be supported by the book, and the neck to be free, able to relax and soften, not having to hold up that heavy neck, heavy head. Feeling the shoulders, which parts of the back, pelvis, the buttocks, legs, the arms, and the feet, which parts are in contact with the earth, and just really, really taking in the sensations of that, really feeling that connection. You are of the earth, supported by the earth. And just taking a moment to tune into your breathing. Breath and the body are not separate. The breath is always present. The body is always breathing. So just being aware of yourself as a breathing body. Bringing awareness to each breath. Just opening out. noticing the sensations and movements in your body as you breathe. Allowing the breath to nurture your body. Appreciating the breath that keeps you alive. The air entering the nostrils, dropping down the throat to the lungs, feeling the movement of the lungs, maybe being aware of the heart, the cage protecting both the heart and the lungs. The lungs, the ribcage gently expanding, contracting with each breath. Tuning into the rhythm of your breathing. So being sensitive to the body as you breathe in, sensitive to the body as you breathe out. And calming the body as you breathe in. Calming the body as you breathe out. Allowing the body to relax. Having this broad awareness for the whole body, breathing. And then paying more attention to the head. So if you're sitting, that sense of the head, the skull balanced, top of the spine. Spine with its natural curve, but that sense of the body, torso upright and alert, shoulders aligned with the hips. And if you're lying down, just feeling the head supported. Allowing your awareness to include the back of the skull. Sides of the head and the upper head and the crown. And the face. If you notice any tension, you can just imagine softening. Softening the brow. Softening around the temples. Softening around the eyes. Soft cheeks. Softening the jaw muscles. Softening the whole face. Aware of the nose and the lips and the chin. The upper jaw, the lower jaw, the teeth and the tongue. And feeling those subtle sensations as the air enters and leaves the nostrils or the mouth. So breathe in and breathe out. Noticing the neck. The throat. So often there is a lot of tension around the throat area. Center of communication, things we say, things we don't say. Into holding in the throat. Just seeing if there can be a sense of softening and opening around the throat. Softening, releasing the sides of the back of the neck. In the shoulders, the back, and in your own way, allowing your attention to take in different areas of the back and the shoulders. Sides of the torso, the chest, the belly. All this, the hips. Genitals and the groin. Including the legs, so the thighs and the knees, shins and the calves, the ankles and the feet. Maybe paying a special attention to the feet. Feet are often our connection with the ground and the earth. And the feet and our legs, they take us where we need to go as we move through the world. What can you feel in your feet right now? Perhaps paying attention to one foot and then the other. A sense of the whole foot, the flesh, all those little bones, the muscles, the skin. Skin quite tight around the top of the foot. Maybe softening a bit just before the toe joint. Sense of each toe. Toenails, the pads of the toes. Maybe there's more sensitivity, the underside of each toe joint. You feel where they connect to the ball of the foot. And you have a sense of the shape and landscape of the foot, including the sides, the arch, heel. Noticing any sensations in the sole of each foot. Warmth and coolness. Tension, softness. Do your feet feel tired, alive? Can you feel your feet breathing? So soft feet. Soft belly. Softening and broadening across the back and the shoulders. Softening around the neck and the throat, softening the face. Allowing the shoulders to release any tension. You can be supported by the ground if you're lying down. Just allowing them to drop if you're sitting. Now bringing awareness to your arms. The upper arm, the elbows, and the forearms. The wrists and the hands. Again, taking a bit more time. Notice your hands. Notice our hands and our arms will often physically help us to connect with the world, with other people. Our hands we use to care for ourselves, clean ourselves, to dress ourselves, to eat, to drink. Communicate through writing, through touch. So see if you can have a sense of care for your own hands. Kind to your hands. Being aware of each finger and each thumb. Anything they're touching. And all the sensations you can feel in the palms of your hands right now. Softening the hands. Noticing your hands are breathing. And broadening out once again to include the whole body. And the whole body is breathing. Breathing through the skin, as well as the mouth and the nose. And the whole body is engaged in this activity of breathing, whether directly or indirectly. We're meditating with our bodies, not just our minds. So experiencing the whole body as we breathe in, as we breathe out. Just noticing if there's any areas of discomfort or pain in your body right now. Any unpleasant sensations. And seeing if you can include them in your awareness. Allowing them to be there, not fixed. Sensations, the flow of sensations. Even with painful sensations, they're not fixed. Just turning towards them with kindness and care. sense of compassion towards yourself and your body. Breathing into that area with kindness. Sense of care. Broadening out again. So any pain and discomfort is just held as part of a much wider experience of your body. Noticing there are any pleasant sensations. It can be very ordinary. Just feeling that contact with the ground. The rhythm of your breathing. Warmth. Softness. Energy. Aliveness. Be just a sense of stillness in the body. Sitting still, lying down. Relaxed. Open. Just noticing the sensations around the heart area. What happens if you just drop in that word, heart? Tender heart. Open heart. Heart as wide as the world. Heart's release. Heart of the world. And just dwelling in your own heart. So being kind to your body. If you're lying down, in how you move from lying down to sitting and standing. If you need to stretch, move, shake, just doing what your body needs. And taking your time for a gentle transition. And we'll just take 15 minutes for a silent tea break. And see if you can, if you have got a little bit more slow, a little bit more mindful, just stay in that state of mind as you get yourself a drink. Doesn't have to be tea. And then it's just an invitation to come back and quietly, mindfully share your drink with others. And then we'll be doing a sitting meditation at 12 o'clock. Just a couple more minutes before we go back to meditating. Okay, so if you want to get yourself in your meditation posture, so if you didn't have time to drink your tea, then it can take a while to boil up the water. So we'll sit for about 25 minutes and then I'll start off the Amitabha mantra. So that feels very much appropriate if we're thinking about the heart, to be bringing in Amitabha, infinite light, infinite compassion. And also, you know, a retreat like this is the Buddha of meditation. So he's been very much in my thoughts during this retreat. I wanted to bring him in a little bit more consciously. And what I'd invite you to do, it feels it would be good to do some kind of metta practice. I know various people struggle with various things about metta or the metta bhavana practice. And there's so much to explore around that, but there's no time now. But what I would like to do is just encourage you maybe to be a little bit more playful and go away from the structure of the five-stage metta. Do it in whatever way you like, but one way that I sometimes enjoy is what I call the butterfly metta, where you spend a little time, as usual, trying to connect with metta towards yourself. And then you just let the mind alight where it will throughout the practice. You might come on one person and you might have like five people from a particular stage. You might stay on one person for a minute, go off, come back to them, stay on someone a lot longer. But rather than thinking, I need to bring this kind of a person now and then think of this kind of person, just let your mind, your imagination, bring in whoever you want. But of course, you're free if you want to do more traditional five-stage practice to do that, but I won't be ringing bells apart from the beginning and the end. Thank you. Om Amidevahi. 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 Om Okay, so we're coming to the end of this morning session. Thank you all for coming and for practicing. Yeah, this afternoon we'll be having another meditation led by Paramananda and going into groups and having Q&A. And just for anybody who only came the first time or hasn't been to the groups, we're just leaving them as a space where people can sort of like explore or share anything that's happening in their practice or around doing the retreat. And you're not, we're not keeping people in the same group, so it's a kind of like random, just see who you're there with. And there's something quite nice about that. But it does mean that you don't need to worry about if you've missed the sessions previously, whether or not you can join in. And yes, the Q&As I think have been getting quite interesting, so do come along, do join in. Okay, I think that's all I've got to say. Did you want to say anything, Paramount?